It is Saturday, January 6, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek news segment, followed by a conversation with you with questions and comments of technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's show is dedicated to the mother of our very own geek, Dee Dee Hubbard, Dr. Ludima, or Dee Stevens, who in her 30-year career as an OBGYN was responsible for thousands of successful births, will be greatly missed by the many people who loved her. You can learn more by going to geekspeak.org, and of course, all the stuff we talk about today. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show to learn more about it. Today's show is going to be focused around the Week in Geek. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on with two big conferences coming up, computer technology conferences, CES, Consumer Electronics Show, and of course, Macworld as well. And during the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go right now to get in our queue. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics. Wait, I already said that one. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks John Tracy, technical support engineer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA Geeks. Welcome to Geek Speak. Oh, and Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control. You might have just heard the door open because he just showed up. Welcome, geeks.
Morning. Good morning.
All right, we're going to do geek news in the first segment. I'd like to go ahead and start with Mr. Tracy. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. In January, as we have the past 3 years, I'd like to give an update of the rovers. Remember in January 2003, we sent a couple of rovers up.
To Mars, right?
Was it Mars? I thought it was Arizona is where the soundstage is.
It looks like Arizona.
Oh, right. Mars, mm-hmm. Right, got it. No, we sent two rovers to Mars. They've been doing great. Their original mission was to be 90 days, 3 months. They've been up there for now 12 times that. They just, for their birthday, well, their birthday's coming up, not yet, uploaded some new software, which is pretty amazing stuff. It's part of the NASA Thinking Machines program. Thinking Spacecraft program. And it gives them a lot more autonomy. Before, if they'd come across a unique feature, a rock, something like that, they would stop and wait for command input.
How long does command input take?
About 30 minutes each way. So
wow.
We receive the image 30 minutes after they get there. We send a command, it's 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's all, of course, dependent on where Mars is relative to.
Exactly. It varies greatly.
The rover says, rock.
What's that?
Let me get it. Go around it.
or extend the arm.
2 hours later.
Yeah. Move it.
or extend the arm. So what they've done is they've given it enough autonomy that it can come up to a rock, decide it's interesting and safe, and manipulate it. You know, go out, extend its robotic arm, do its sampling.
It makes sense that this would be a thing they could do now, because now they have a whole bunch of idea of what it's used to running into. So basically anything that's it's run into before, it's like, well, let's do the same thing. So they probably did some classification, you know, if it's this big, if it's this large, run. I'm sure is one of the commands.
One of the other cool things it's going to be able to do, they've accidentally caught and taken pictures of dust devils, and they're very fascinated to learn more about this phenomenon. So they've put in software where it can now recognize dust devils.
Was that like a Looney Tune cartoon, or no?
That's a Tasmanian devil.
Oh, thank you very much.
No worries. So it can recognize when a death devil is happening by certain parameters. Same with clouds. It can also do cloud gazing. and it can do it all autonomously, which
Wait,
is pretty cool.
Autonomous cloud gazing sounds very scary to me.
What were we doing at work this week?
Well... Well, thank you. So they've uploaded new software, and they're doing cloud gazing, and they know how to deal with rocks now.
And dust devils.
They're learning. They're growing.
They're three years old.
Yay.
Almost.
I'm still amazed, actually.
That you're here, that you made it on time for the show.
Especially after being up at 3 at my second party.
That we have these rovers on Mars, and that we're transmitting brand new instructions. Like, think about reinstalling Windows, like reinstalling your operating system.
You just gave me my spine just like...
Right, but like think about how much trouble we have with having someone like... Think of calling someone on the phone and walking them or talking them through installing Windows, installing an operating system.
Why are you doing this to me? Right. Why are you making me think this way?
Right, because...
It's too early to think about this.
Because this is... They are millions of miles away and...
And that's what we're doing.
Resubmitting software.
That's pretty cool.
Successfully. We do have a
I just want to give a sense of scale here. I mean, this is amazing.
It is. It is totally amazing that we're reinstall operating system millions of miles away. I wonder if this is the first install of new...
Oh, no. We've done upgrades before. Mm-hmm. But this is really major. This is the first time that we've ever done this much stuff and tried to make them this autonomous. We do have a captive rover at JPL that they do tests on. So they can test it on the actual hardware before upload it and work out the kinks. Because if it gets stuck, that's the end of the life of that craft.
Now, if it's an upgrade, I mean, Miles, I don't want to take the... You know what? I won't. Let's go on. thank you, John, very much for the update on Mars. Sean, hi.
Hi, good morning. So last week we talked about AACS, the Digital Rights Management Protection Scheme employed by HD and Blu-ray drive makers and content providers. AACS is the Advanced Access Content System.
Mm-hmm.
And we had reported that it had been cracked. Well, it was not cracked.
Oh. It was fictitious cracking.
No. You did get around it, though.
Oh.
The software was released. It's called Backup HD DVD. It's the first tool that circumvents AACS. What it does is it exposes each disk's hard-coded private key, in which lets the hardware device run as though it's routinely decrypting the movie.
Oh, wait. So is it a hardware fix or a software fix?
Well, it's a software fix for a specific hardware.
Oh.
So
it's not nearly as exciting.
I guess their response would be the people who put the content on the disks to say, for this particular hardware, run the routine that stops this. Because he's circumventing the routine that stops the decryption of the... So they could, on a hardware device basis, because this guy's got keys, they just don't know which devices he has keys for.
Well, so
it's a lot of stuff out there, and he could just release them one at a time. It could be quite a process. Very time-consuming.
So it's not as cool as...
That's it. So he's getting around it. And he's figuring out ways to do it on different hardware.
All right. Well, thank you for the update on
that. And he says that the reason is because they're publishing volume keys. They're putting these keys in memory. He's able to get to them. He's able to see what it is and get around it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. We'll post a link. CDR Info has a lot of interesting information on this. And I guess this guy's really talking about what he's doing, which is interesting.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Sean, for that. I'm going to go over to Mr. Elon. Miles, hi.
Hi. In the past on the show, we've talked to people, told people stop using Internet Explorer. And there's also been the, should you move from Internet Explorer 6 to Internet Explorer 7? The answer to that last question is yes, you should move to Internet Explorer 7. It is much more secure. But to highlight how bad Internet Explorer 6 is from a security standpoint.
How bad is it?
Okay, 2006. 365 days in that year. IE had a vulnerability that did not have a patch associated with it. So even if you were trying to patch your system up to the best of your ability, like every day went up and tried to get the most recent bug fixes, you were vulnerable 284 days.
Out of 365.
Out of 365. More than 9 months.
See, that's 81 days. I got it right.
What if you just have your computer off those days? Is that safe?
Yes, you would be safe then. So please stop using Internet Explorer 6. In fact, stop using Internet Explorer and go ahead and download Firefox or Opera.
Okay, well, let me add a little juice to this conversation. Sean, I noticed recently that in your taskbar on one of your Windows machines, you have Internet Explorer 7 and not Firefox. Are you using that as your primary browser at this point?
What system?
I don't know. Some system I was looking at last night. I just thought that maybe you'd moved over because I remember you having frustration with Firefox.
No.
Oh, good. You're still on... Okay. Never mind.
I wish.
Are you talking about my test system?
Yeah. I think it was one of the test systems.
Yeah.
It was just a base install.
So, okay. We're doing.
I wish
we're
folks
doing a
could
big,
see the look on his face right now. He's like, "What are you nuts?"
We're doing a big birthday LAN party for John's son Quinn today.
Happy birthday!
Happy today. Birthday, Quinn! Happy birthday.
So I decided to bring one of my test systems from work to pound on it because we're going to be gaming and I'm going to overclock it. And I figured this is ability, a chance for me to do some work too.
to work during the weekend. Yay!
So yeah, that system probably doesn't have Firefox because all I do is run benchmarks and overclock. And I have other systems that I surf the web on. So I probably do need to install Firefox on that.
I see.
And
okay.
That's why you didn't see.
So was that your plug to get like a raise? You see, I'm working on the weekend.
I think if they're going to give him a raise for working a lot, they would have already had done that. Already up to like 50 hours a week. All right. Thank you very much for whose story was that? What were we talking about?
That was mine.
Right, so I have another story.
Okay, Sean.
All right. Is this Miles' turn?
No.
You just had the story. So CES is happening this next week. Macworld is too.
Now, in the beginning of the show, I didn't know what CES was.
It's a consumer electronics show. This is the show that's kind of supplanted COMDEX in Las Vegas, except it's not computer oriented. It's consumer electronics.
Now, define,
it's gadgets.
Give a quick definition.
It's all this sexy cool stuff.
Okay.
Sexy cool stuff.
Thanks.
Definition.
That's a great definition of computer electronics.
Really, if you're a marketing person, you want to be at CES because that's where all the cool things are happening.
This is where all the high definition TVs, Blu-ray players, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Okay, so what are people telling
you? This is where you're going to see, 100 plus inch, LCD and plasma screens. Yeah, it's really cool.
Are you going?
They use clear duct tape. They tape 50 inch together, So I am not going, unfortunately. I really wanted to go. It's a fun show. But there's a lot of pre-announcements happening, things you can expect to see. One of those was LG is going to announce the first Blu-ray / HD DVD player. It will play both.
I think, I wish I had the clip, but I believe Sean and I think all of us have said that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time.
Now, a lot of people are not happy about this.
Why?
Because it's good for consumers because it gives you a safe choice, but it's not going to help solve which one's going to win. And the problem is a lot of studios are sticking with either one or the other.
Why does one have to win? Why can't we have multiple technologies?
Well, because let's say you want to buy your favorite movie.
You buy it on the hybrid disc.
I guess it's going to...
Yeah.
I just think you could have the technology of one could be much better instead of when you have a drive that supports both. I think it's going to take a while.
I think if you have two competing
really support codecs, both really well.
If you have two competing technologies, though, that usually helps both of them.
Yeah, it's true. And if you think there's some cost on top of all this equipment because of the patents that people own, and both these systems are owned by different companies because of the patents, isn't it possible that they'll have to bid each other out, and therefore the companies will drop their price that they get on the patents that they have? And theoretically, even that could get reduced in cost.
Yeah.
So it could be a win for everybody.
It could be.
Are there discs that will be?
Warner Brothers is supposed to announce next week. This is from CDR Info. I guess they got some advanced information that they're going to come out with a total HD disc that includes both Blu-ray and HD versions of a movie on the same disc.
Wow.
So that's the other side of the fence. That's really where they're concerned that, it'd be interesting to see where people go. A lot of the content houses, they've decided that you're just going to go with one or the other.
Okay,
it sounds like Warner Brothers they're really trying to get out there everywhere. In fact, Sonic, which is made by Roxio, has come out with a way of downloading movies now. And then burning into DVD, it's a content protection system that allows you to only watch it on one computer, the computer that it was burned on, or standard DVD players. And Warner Brothers is working with them on that. So, I think the studios and the hardware makers are trying everything they can do to get this standard out in one form or another and make it work for people.
Cool.
Because I think a lot of people just aren't buying it right now.
If you had to choose, like right now, if you're given a whole bunch of money, you had to choose a Blu-ray or HD, which one would you do? If price wasn't an issue, which would you buy? Or do you still want to wait to find out which one wins?
You know, I think I would buy a Blu-ray.
Really?
Not a consumer, but...
For your computer.
Yeah,
my computer. Because it stores more.
A burner, yeah, for 50, because it stores 50 gigs of data. And I would love the ability to burn 50 gigs of data disks just to back up. That would be great.
How much does HD DVD hold?
30. So, but that's me. I mean, yeah. I'm more interested in backup.
The storage.
And I think, you know, they both play 1080p content, high definition, so.
So right now, would you kind of be going, like, hold off, wait?
You know, unless you got a lot of money.
Okay.
I mean, Samsung dropped their price of their Blu-ray player by $100. So you can get theirs for $900 now.
Oh, forget it.
Well, you can get Sony's PS3.
So, now, is that a consumer Blu-ray or is that an in-box?
That's a consumer.
Okay, so the one that you're talking about, the PS3 one, is a USB external, and that is cheaper. All right, thank you for all that content news. Let's go ahead and, John, you've got a story about space, kind of.
Kind of. It's about electronic voting machines.
And what does that have to do with space?
What does that have to do with space? Well, back in May 18th, 2003, in Brussels, they had an election. When they tallied the votes, the winner won by 4,096 votes more than there were actually people. So
that's the kind of odds you want.
That's a little suspicious. Yeah. So they looked to see what went wrong. Everything in the process went properly, so they couldn't figure it out. They traced it to a voting machine that had way more votes than it could have.
Okay, now wait. What we should do right now is say, can you answer the question and you get a T-shirt or something? Like, it's a contest. Wouldn't that be cool?
Okay.
But we don't have T-shirts. So go on. What's the answer?
The answer is it was struck by a cosmic ray, which altered a bit.
That's their assumption, their finding.
No, that's now what they've... Yeah, that's now that they know what to look for. This company in... It's an Italian-French company. Sorry, French-Italian company called Autran. I'm pronouncing that incorrectly because I don't speak French. Sorry. They have a lab set up at 8,000 feet to measure cosmic rays, and they see what damage it does to electronics. And so now they know what footprint to look for to say, oh, this is a cosmic ray strike in a piece of electronics. And it's enough to alter a bit at the 130 nanometer scale. Now we're moving to 65 nanometer. They say it's going to be enough. One single cosmic ray will alter 4 bits of information. So they're trying to figure out ways.
Does it hit exactly right?
Well, it's...
It has to hit exactly wrong. But yes, it does have to hit. You know, it's a cosmic ray. It's a particle. It's a neutron that's traveling at incredibly high speed.
Does it have to go through the transistor on the baseline pairing? Does it even have to like?
I don't know if it has to follow a certain tunnel. Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't there some shielding?
It's not going to do any
a case.
No, they can't shield them. In fact, with space electronics, they have to provide a redundant system in case the first one is struck and fails. So what these people are trying to do is develop ways of getting around that.
Remember last night when we booted that machine the first time and it didn't really work?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
No, because cosmic ray is permanent damage.
Does it permanently damage the computer?
No. I don't think it permanently alters that. Well, it doesn't permanently. It alters the information.
It alters that information, sure. Yeah.
So that's 20,000 votes that just 4, popped 000. In there. 4,000?
Yeah.
Well, it's 4,000 now. We just blame on the cosmos.
I think that chances is so
God weird. Said this one shall win, and there was.
We can blame everything on.
I'm sorry, I wasn't really focusing on that for a second. Thanks, John.
I was speechless.
Let's. Who wants the next one? Miles or Sean? Miles, go for it.
Toyota has announced that they have. Or they're in the process of developing an alcohol detection system that can detect drunken drivers.
Woo-hoo!
And immobilize the car.
From afar?
No, what it will do is in a few different ways. One is when a person gets into the car and they grab onto the steering wheel, it will check for alcohol levels in the sweat.
It jabs a needle deep into your palm.
just like anyone who's
in
been
the
drinking.
Sweat?
Yeah.
Of the
someone who's
wheel?
Been drinking, you can smell that. Smell the alcohol off of their sweat.
I got a bad sense of smell.
Okay. Well,
or I smell bad?
So if it does detect this, it will not allow the car to turn on. In addition, if it detects that you have certain problems like abnormal steering habits, or a special camera installed shows that the driver's pupils are not in focus, then the car will be slowed to a halt.
Hopefully not on the freeway. So does that mean if you're like going along and all of a sudden you put on some Devo and you start, yeah, woohoo, and they're like, that's weird, and the car goes, no.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's computers controlling your car. What could possibly go wrong?
Cosmic ray. Today's answer, cosmic ray. So is this I assume this is...
This is not a release product. This is a development project.
But this could be... And this could be... I mean, the first case would be for people that have already been convicted. You, part of the sentencing is your car has to be modified like this, and then you can drive, so you can still get to work and such. But
from what I was gathering, they were just talking about it. I mean, they haven't talked about putting this in production yet, right. So this is just the technology.
There's been a dashboard one for a while where you could blow into it and start the car. We talked about that a couple of years ago, where there's actually a breathalyzer in the dashboard that won't allow the car to turn on. But, of course, you can get your friend to do it for you.
Right.
But this one, you have to be at the wheel. Now, I think it's pretty cool. Thank you very much. I like the idea of stopping people from driving under the influence.
So that's what driving gloves are made for.
What about that? What about wearing gloves? See, John knows how to beat the system, Miles. You can't get away from John. John will drive drunk no matter whether you want it or not.
I don't even drink.
You don't even drink. That's true. All right, I got a news item. As you geeks know, I've been working on tools for the GeekSpeak website, which is geekspeak.org. And I've been doing it in Ruby on Rails, which is this really cool programming environment in Ruby, I love it. Dee Dee actually showed me about it and taught me a bit about it. She taught some classes at NYU with it. In any case, Ruby on Rails is this really cool kind of rapid application development environment for web applications.
What does that name mean?
Ruby on Rails. It means that it's Ruby, which is like a scripting language, like Perl or JavaScript, or it's a scripting language. And the Rails means we're going to put an infrastructure for you, and you've got to follow that pattern. So it's kind of restricting the way you think of it so that it's a system. It's basically, what is that called?
A framework. Or a set of design patterns.
But it's also a frame. It's a
very rigid.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
I would have never thought that. All right.
That's what the Rails means. Sure. But it also means you're getting there faster. You know, so it has a dual meaning.
Okay.
It's meant to be as simple as possible, but the simplest way of getting something done is the correct way. Yeah. Whereas Ruby is
the actual name of the
language.
The language.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. So you program in Ruby. And there's a whole bunch of libraries.
Now, you like Ruby, but Miles does not.
No, Ruby. Miles
likes it. There's no problem with Ruby.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's other languages that have fightings and stuff, but no, he just doesn't do any programming in it. So I'm a little alone. So that's one of the problems.
Why don't you do any programming in Ruby, Miles?
He doesn't have programming at all. He wants to be an English teacher. Leave him alone.
this guy programs in Java, just on the side for fun.
So,
Sean, you write all the time in English. Why don't you write in Spanish for a change?
Oh yeah, huh? That'd be hard. That'd be work.
All right, so I've been doing Ruby on Rails development. The other geek that does Ruby on Rails is Dee Dee, and she lives in the other side of the continent. So. I've been wanting to get together with people that do this kind of work to get more excited because Miles isn't that excited about it. So, luckily, there's a Ruby on Rails group in Santa Cruz, and it's a website called Meetup. And in any case, on the GeekSpeak site, as soon as I use this Ruby application to turn this news story on, all right, it's now live on
GeekSpeak.org. The tools, by the way, have been coming along really well.
Thank you. They're still buggy, but they are...
You're doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of buggy...
In any case, Ruby on Rails Meetup is happening the 10th. On Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. If you're interested, go to geekspeak.org, click on today's show, which of course is the 6th, and take a look at the media.
And you'll be there?
I'm going to go to that, yeah. So if you're in the Santa Cruz area and
really
you want to...
Geek Fest.
Yeah, it's going to be a Geek Fest. All right. We're done with news stories.
No.
No, we'll do another one right after I say these quick words.
A lot of good stuff.
All right, good. GeekSpeak is supported... Oh, now not even prepared. How silly is that? GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Stay with KOSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, directly following GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. I'm Lyle Troxell. This is GeekSpeak, as it is every week, on Saturday at 10 to 11. The geeks today are John, Miles, and Sean. We have Rick Philman, and he's in the other room, so you don't hear him on air, but he's there relentlessly every week to answer your calls with questions and comments of technology and pipe him onto the air. So please do call us and ask us questions. We'd be happy to help you. 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us, but we don't get to those as well as we get to the phone call. So again, 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean, go ahead with your news story, sir, please.
News?
Leave me hanging, man.
Samsung has announced the world's first LCD that is double-sided.
LCD double-sided?
Yeah. So it's going to be used for notebooks. It's LCD panel that can produce independent images on each side of a mobile LCD display.
Now, is this just two LCDs glued together, or is it different?
Who cares? That's so cool.
Or do you see everything reversed on the back?
No, it's two images.
You know, everybody has to go around the table to look at with the image.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine if you could just show them on the other side of the table?
Look, you guys could read my screen right now.
In fact, I could show you something, and I could be looking at something else.
Perfect.
This is really brilliant.
So
of course, it'll be full of fingerprints. It'll be all smudged because you've been carrying it around.
And scratched and broken and damaged.
It'll have crayon marks on it, you know. But it reduces the overall thickness of mobile products by at least 1 millimeter. Wow. I love it.
It's going to be really cool for cell phones, too.
So, it's kind of interesting. It has two gates that operate each pixel instead of one. So, the screen on the front of the display, it displays different images than the one on the back. It's using some technology they came up with, the amorphous silicon gate.
So it is really, the screens are definitely integrated.
Yeah, they're definitely integrated.
All right, thank you very much for that news story. I'm going to start taking calls. We will do more news as we need to. From Santa Cruz, Sam, welcome to GeekSpeak. You've been waiting a long time. What's your question?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And is this your brother's keeper show?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
No. I don't know the reference. I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding.
Is this a cosmic ray reference?
No, I actually have a real question about technology here.
All right, go for it.
I've been having difficulty with repeated requests for passwords. And I think you had a call last week. I had it on the background, and I didn't, listen closely.
You weren't paying attention to us, Sam?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
And,
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Okay, so you've been prompted for a lot of passwords, or people are asking
for
passwords?
Yeah, I mean, every time I, want to do something, they want a password. And I have so many passwords at this point that, I don't even know who I am. So,
you know, I waste time going to sites that I haven't been at a while, putting in all the passwords I use until I finally get to the one that
I always have a non-sensitive information password. It doesn't have to be a non-secure password, but make it anytime you go somewhere that they just want to implant a cookie or whatever on your browser,
and
have one password for that.
Okay.
I'm not telling you. Not telling anyone.
Yeah, my question is there a way to simplify this password keychain?
Are you on a Mac or on a Mac, Windows?
Yeah, it's a Mac.
Yeah. So what's happening? You're being prompted all the time is whenever you install software.
And well, I can't send mail. Right now, always something different every day.
This is the thing is that you're right. So the Mac's going to have one base one that it's going to need, and that's your user account. That's the one that you actually log into the computer on.
Right.
Your mail's going to be a different password. Those are two that are going to be probably always different, probably even different usernames. And then there's not a lot other ones that should be different, but then, of course, wireless access. Basically, you've got a whole bunch of different things that start happening. The keychain in the Macintosh environment is supposed to save this information for you, so you only need one password for the keychain, and then it starts helping you by doing the keys for you.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're running into. What you want to start doing is take a note, not necessarily of what they are, but take a note of when you're prompted and then make some reference to what that one wants. So figure out what it is by, trying a couple and go, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And then make a reference, call that password, very secure, or, some name that makes sense to you. And then just start kind of keep track of what they are. Because you want to build kind of a knowledge map about what the computer's doing.
Yeah.
So I understand that when I'm in the mail application, I get prompt for a password. That's for my mail. But it's not always clear. So that's my recommendation, is try to start doing a visual map of what things are.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Certainly.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, bye.
You kind of need it with that kind of advice. All right, so we've got a lot of calls now. Let's go ahead and go to... you know, you guys are chatting so much in this AIM, I can't find who called. Ah!
You and Rick need your own private channel.
I guess so. Paul from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question today?
Hi, this is Paul. I am on the line, right?
You are on air
live
with the geeks.
Okay, in the past week there have been two huge, I think, technological advances that have blown my mind. I wanted to share them with you.
Great.
One was at the University of Central Florida. This guy named Belfield managed to layer information on a DVD rather than having it on one layer.
Sure.
And the claim is that they can keep the whole Library of Congress on one DVD simply by having more layers of laser, you know, dots and zeros.
So we covered that one a few weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it was 2 weeks old now.
Yeah. No, that's, that was really
if
cool.
If that's true, that eliminates, I mean, that'll change the whole face of temporary memory storage.
Rick actually sent us a link to a news story about this just a few minutes ago.
Good.
And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm trying to figure out which of the huge corporations are going to try and buy this guy's patent or steal it from him or do whatever and take over first, as with the Blu-ray and the other thing.
It's in a research stage. We get a lot of stories about university
holographic
research.
Holographic media.
There's a lot of things that will turn into very
remember the one on paper?
Intensive spaces. Paper, that's right. Gigabytes of data on a piece of paper. So there's always technology being used in the research fields, and it hits, and we hear about it, and it takes a while before it actually is
yeah,
is
I'm aware of that. I just think this one is really close, or the story sounded like they're really close to actually enacting it and being able to put it in a computer.
Well,
whether they do or not is another question.
That's right.
I really wish one of these would happen because we really need a secure, you know, something safe that we can back up large amounts of data onto.
Well, there's one more that you as fellow geeks sort of love.
Please do.
Is the phase state change replacement for a transistor, wherein you don't have a constant current refreshing the memory, but you actually have a change of phase.
Are you talking about quantum phase state, or are you talking?
It doesn't
have
to be quantum. It's just a change of phase of material.
Yeah,
rather than having it be kept there by a constant current.
Yeah, I think I read that story too at some point. The one thing about that, and it's great for like memory storage for making memory stable, right? It's kind of like a pseudo flash memory.
Right.
The issue with it is that it is a little slower than the best memory we have currently. So you wouldn't want to replace your main memory with it.
Right.
So, but it's still very cool technology. And absolutely, this kind of stuff is very exciting. The other field that's really exciting for future tech is looking at new materials. There's a lot of new materials being produced all the time that have properties that are things we haven't seen before, which are going to manifest themselves in completely new technologies. Like aerogel is one of them. And we haven't seen all the ramifications of that, but basically a solid that is almost completely transparent and very, very light. You can do a lot of cool optics in it.
Wow.
In any case, so there's a lot of technology, and I appreciate the call with more of them. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll go on to the next caller, if it's okay with you geeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? All right.
Hi, Mommy.
From Santa Cruz again, Tony. Oh, I'll push the button. Tony, hi. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. Hey, I just wanted to say, to the news clip about cosmic ray shitting election machines is just incredible to me.
Yeah, to us as well. So, next, what's your question?
Well, okay, two questions. The main one that I came on with is, can I turn a real audio stream into a podcast? There's a lot of great content out there that's not available yet as a podcast, but I don't want to listen to it at my computer. I want to listen to it on the go.
Tony, how geeky are you?
Moderately.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can. There you go.
Can you give me any
I'll give you some more feedback. First off, it probably doing it in a digital way, meaning on your computer with software hacks, is probably against the law, against the Digital Millennium Copyright Law, because you'd have to break real audio's patents on security or break their security model. You can do it probably a relatively legal way, if you will, even though it's copyright infringement, basically. It could be argued as copyright infringement, depending on what content it is, by taking a computer and playing the audio and then taking another computer or another source and recording that audio. So then you're not actually doing it in the digital world. You're doing it in the analog world. So the Digital Millennium Copyright Act would not come into effect. But it's pretty hard to do this. What I would recommend is there is a lot of wonderful content that is podcasted. And just start using that, because you're going to spend so much time trying to hack this solution, and then you're going to be in this state where you're kind of working on that problem rather than listening to the content you want to listen to. So, for example, KOSP does all their original contents podcasted, or a lot of the original contents podcasted. And then I can't recommend enough NPR's content. If you go to NPR's podcast, like our own Dr. Don show is up on NPR's podcast list. There's a whole bunch of shows that are up there, and you can podcast all those. What is the content that you're listening to?
Well, actually, it was NPR's Fresh Air. I was disappointed to see that Terry Gross's Fresh Air is only the archives are only available by purchase from audiobooks, and they're actually, you know, much more expensive than say anything on iTunes.
Right, but you can stream them on the site anytime you want.
I'm sorry,
but you can stream them on her.
Yeah,
on her
you
site.
Can. Right,
yeah, right, right.
So it's not so much stealing; it's just wanting to be able to take them on the go.
Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, being in the radio business to some degree, even though I volunteer on my time, I'm not going to recommend hacking that system. I'd recommend listening to her new shows, because she's a great interviewer and she's amazing, and the new stuff is podcasted.
Yep.
And sending her a letter saying that, you know, this is too expensive. If I could buy a year of your stuff from audio books, I would. But I'm not going to buy these little tiny chunks that cost so much money. And
yeah,
see,
I'm really,
you know,
surprised. For a one-hour show, they want $3 or more.
Yeah, right. So
for an interview.
I think it makes sense to contact audiobooks and say, look, I want this, but I want a lot of it, and I want it for a little cheaper. And they might make a deal with you. I don't know if they've got a price for, like, a big blanket amount. But you could maybe buy a year of Terry Gross for, you know, $50. Maybe that would be worth it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a possibility. But okay. I wouldn't crack the system.
Can I get one more general Mac question in?
Since it's a Mac question, yeah, go ahead.
Thanks a lot. I have a Core Duo iMac I got last spring.
Okay.
You know, got it. It was blazing fast. It's still pretty fast. But there's disturbingly more and more times when the beach ball is spinning.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, in various applications. And I'm wondering, is this just the... And with every computer I've had, it just seems over time there's a general slowdown. And is this due to fragmentation? Can I just copy everything over to a hard drive?
Make sure. No, I wouldn't reinstall on this. I think you should make sure to restart your machine. If it's not restarted, definitely restart the machine, because it will clear up a lot of things on that.
Uh-huh.
There, I'm sure, are some things to fix your, you know, make your machine faster. You can do a disk check on it, but it probably won't do much to it. John, do you have any suggestions on OS X making the machines faster over time? Nothing. Shaking your head? Or
no, I don't, unfortunately.
The other thing I would suggest, lots of times when I see a beach ball kind of thing happen, that little color wheel of slowness, it's because of network problems, that my machine's trying to do something on the network and it's not succeeding at that. And if that occurs, it occurs to a lot of the applications. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the problem. The other thing is, you might have some tasks in the background that are taking up some time. And I would definitely try to figure out what those are and stop them. So,
but you don't worry about the system being fragmented and not all being written
Not with a Macintosh. I just don't see that happening. My machine doesn't seem to slow down over time like that. There's always other causes for it. On a Windows environment, I definitely agree that's the case, or at least Windows XP, that every once in a while you want to reinstall the operating system. For OS X, I haven't seen that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'm going to respond to the radio.
Please.
You can install software like Replay AV,
mm-hmm,
that will record radio shows to your
even
computer.
Real audio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Live streams. Records them to your hard drive.
And then you can do anything you want with them.
Yep.
Is it legal?
We'll put the link up. The software's for sale. What you do with it's your own business, right? I mean,
I guess.
If it were not legal, it wouldn't be for sale, right? The company wouldn't be there.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that. We'll get sued eventually.
We'll put it up there.
All right. Steven, Big Sir, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hey,
I wanted to thank you. I called in a few weeks ago, and I
use Migration Wizard assistant uh-huh. to bring everything over to my new MacBook, and it worked great.
Yay! We succeeded, you guys. I think yeah. that's
and then I was
years,
also able to hook up all of my. I was able to hook up all my Cat 5 wiring and wireless also over the Christmas break, and it all worked. So thank you.
Certainly.
I now have a question on my Mac.
Oh, I see. So we help you out. A little thanks, and then more. There's
That's
always
right.
more. Okay, what's up?
Exactly. On my Mac now, I'm in this wireless environment in two places on my property. I'm wondering now what safeguards I need to take as far as security, firewalls, besides what's already came on the Linksys, and then whatever there is on the Apple already.
Any of the geeks have suggestions on making yourself safe? Your remote location?
Yes.
Don't worry about it.
Us war drivers never hit the hills that hard anyway.
I'm in a very remote location. You know, but is there any concern I have as far as also the internet?
Does your wireless point have WAP, W-A-A-P, enabled?
Good question. I don't know.
Okay, so yeah. Check out your wireless.
Definitely.
Wait. W-A-P?
Yeah, W-A-P.
W-E-P.
W-E-P.
Wireless
W-E-P
encryption
or W-P-A.
Protocol.
W-E-P is useless. W-P-A is the one you want to use.
Yes.
So W-E-P, everybody can crack it and hack it. And if you, even having it on is just going to cause more confusion, and it's not really going to be helpful to you. W-P-A?
Yes.
Okay. Wireless protocol access?
Protection algorithm?
Good. We can make up
algorithms. That's actually, I think, very close to what it is. Might be it.
Oh, Google.
Good. And something else you can do, Wikipedia. Just really, really simple thing to do, is don't broadcast the name of your network.
That's true. It's really easy.
You can easily turn that off. It makes it really difficult for somebody to even know.
Wireless protected access.
When you access your wireless access point and you modify it through the web interface, whatever,
okay.
There's going to be an access point name. Make sure you write that, or you can put a name in there that you remember.
Okay.
And then you can turn off your it's called, sometimes it's
broadcast
called, like,
ID.
Yeah, but sometimes it's called, like, make it a private network.
Yeah.
Make it private.
Yeah.
And it basically doesn't tell anybody what its name is. And then you can...
if you don't have the name, then you can't get access.
Right.
It makes it very difficult.
Right. So it's kind of convenient. Though people can detect it still, it's a little harder. Again, I would do, if you want to be secure, do WPA, do a 64-bit key. Miles, are you agreeing with me on this? WPA, 64-bit?
64-bit?
Isn't that right? 128? Do 128?
Unfortunately, I'm not completely up on my wireless specs at the top of my
head.
Sorry,
what?
Man.
Oh, man.
If you really want to get secure, I recommend SonicWall.
SonicWall?
They're wireless. You can only use VPN to get access.
That's nice.
And
but
it separates it from the internal network. I mean, it's a hardware fix there.
Yeah, that's
it's
a really,
really
good
cool.
solution. But since you already have wireless, I would enable WPA, put on encryption. Can you think of it from a password? Turn off that you're broadcasting it. No, don't turn off broadcasting. It's just it's going to be harder for you to work on the computer. The reason why I say you got to remember that name of it is that now your computer will not see that it's there, and you have to say add, and then you have to put the name in, and then the machine will connect, and you got another password.
Yeah, and I'm going back and forth in two environments on the property now. It comes in, and there's a wireless router, mm-hmm. the Linksys, and then when I'm over at this other building, that's my office, it comes over via actually the Cat 5 wire, and then it goes out via Airport Express.
Okay.
And, of course, it wants to sometimes, pick up one or the other.
Okay, so make both those guys have the same name
uh-huh.
and make them the same WAP password, and then they will and put them on different channels, but one on channel A and one on channel B.
And so how
and
do
then
I
they will them? Actually merge. It will not matter to you which one it connects. You
okay.
change the name in the interface to them so that Apple used the Airport
SSID
tool. And SSID. On the Apple, use the Apple Airport tool, and on the other one, use the web interface. And you can change the names on both of those, and that's what I'd recommend.
Okay.
And then it'll be seamless to you.
And Alex recommends 512 if you've got the encryption available.
If you can do 512.
Go for the highest you can possibly go for.
512 encryption.
If you can remember a number that's big enough for that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be a big number.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much.
One last question, if I can.
Oh, sure. Why not?
On the MacBook OS 10, of course, is the latest operating system. I still have one program I'd like to be able to run OS 9 on. If I put OS 9 on this, is there going to be any problems?
Yes. No. Putting it on there, no. But getting it running might be problematic. It might be hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
Is this an Intel Mac or not?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if you can run OS 9.
Okay. I can't
but
even
give
do
it a shot. You know, I'm sure you're
pretty sure you can.
You can.
Classic still works on Intel Macs.
It does.
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't know that.
On
Intel Mac? I thought you couldn't even do it in Tagger.
Oh, okay. I may not be correct on that then.
I have no idea.
I think it's time to go buy a cheap Mac and stick it in the corner for running this one application.
Well, I do have that, and that's probably what I'll end up doing.
Good luck.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the call.
Bye.
All right. This is Mac Speak, and this is Geek Speak. We answer any kind of questions and comments. We're doing all Mac, but we don't want to. So please, if you've got a Windows machine, I know that you've got problems. So give us a call, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. We take any kind of question of technology. We just don't know what we're doing. So, all right, let's see, Santa Cruz again. Mike, welcome to Geek Speak, Mike.
Hi.
Hi
this morning. Question, kind of follow on to what you were talking about earlier this morning on browsers. You said, Internet Explorer versus Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Mac, which seems like everybody this morning has, and it came Safari. I also have Firefox on it. And what's your take between those two browsers?
Which one do you like?
It's kind of odd. Some things I can get better on Safari, and then others better on Firefox. They'll come online a little quicker and so on. So I'm puzzled. I don't know if...
From a security standpoint, they're both pretty good. I guess if I had to choose one that was more secure than the other, I would say Safari, but they're really close to one another.
Is that right?
Not to mention the fact that you're on a Mac, so you're also a harder target there. But so it's whichever one you prefer.
Yep.
Now, Alex mentioned earlier that Firefox does not support Keychain.
Okay, which Safari does, huh?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
does that really matter?
I don't know. Because a lot of it's going to be web page access, and Firefox has its own password manager. So
right.
Does that really make an impact?
But the password manager isn't secure password manager.
Yeah. That's
so
never been
you can
an issue for
view
any,
the profile and see all the passwords, yeah. Or so I've been told.
There is a bug with it, but the way it's designed.
Let me say it this way: there's three geeks right now in the air room that have Macintoshes. Two of them use Firefox. One of them uses Safari.
Okay.
There you go.
Who do you like best of the three?
One of them's me. So the other two.
I've got both open right now.
Oh, so the guy. Okay, so
I just have Firefox open.
There you go.
Okay.
So all of us use Firefox, and one of us also uses Safari. There's
Super.
Your answer. Thank you so much.
Thanks
for
your
help. I use Safari because Safari was better before Firefox came out.
Yeah,
a lot of my bookmarks are still in there, and I'm just too lazy to bring them
over. It's data migration. That
you know,
sense.
The new Firefox has gotten much more stable for me after uninstalling all the extensions.
Mm. I thought that might be extension problems. That's good to know. So don't install so many extensions.
Yeah, right now, I don't think Firefox is just dust.
Yeah, and if you have an older Mac, Safari might do a lot better job because it handles low memory better. Firefox, if you don't have enough memory, it'll be very slow.
It is a hog.
All right, from Pacific Grove, we have Diane. Diane, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. Hi. I don't know if you've I tuned in a little late, and I also...
We have not answered your question yet, and we do have your email, so it's in front of us.
Okay,
so,
well, that's my question.
I actually already did, but that's okay.
John, what did you answer?
I'll be happy to read it.
What's the question?
What's the question?
The question
is,
she wants
what about the new Apple cell phones?
Can she run over and buy the iPhone early next week?
Is that what your question is?
Yeah, pretty much. I have a Nano, and I have absolutely no interest in having music on my cell phone. However, we also have a Prius, and
you want Bluetooth integration?
I have Bluetooth integration in the Prius, and I'm wondering if that's going to be the case with the new Apple cell phone, or if you know anything about this at all.
Diane,
actually.
I am so excited about this question because I have no idea, and John has an answer, so let's hear it. John?
Okay.
No one outside Apple actually has a real answer. This is one of those rumors that's been plaguing Apple for a long time.
I know. I've been
time.
Reading them.
And there is nobody outside Apple knows currently. There's a lot of speculation about it. There's no hard facts. There's been a lot of Photoshopped mock-ups. Anyone who tells you yes, the iPhone will exist doesn't know what they're talking about. Apple does not own the iPhone name.
I thought the iPhone was from HP. Didn't we have a story about an iPhone? It was
the iPhone
HP.
Is trademarked by someone else.
It will not be called the iPhone. I would love to see it. I have strong doubts that it will be coming out this year.
Oh, really?
Is that a prediction?
So I should go ahead and buy a Bluetooth.
I would totally wait a week.
Yes.
I would love to be wrong on that.
I have a Palm Treo 650 that works perfectly well with my Prius.
There you go. Palm
what
Treo.
Is it?
It's a Palm Treo 650.
Palm
The Treo 700's out now.
It's not the ease of use you're looking for in an Apple product, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking for the ease of use.
But it's not a difficult.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
But it's a handspring product, right?
It's not. It's not Microsoft based. It's Palm.
And this is the Treo. It's handspring.
Is that handspring still around? No,
Sorry.
It's Palm.
Okay.
It's Palm.
Palm Handspring 650.
It's
Treo.
Ignore handspring.
No, it's the Palm Treo 650.
And I have a Nokia, and I don't know the model number. It's a smartphone. It's nice and big, and it works great with his Prius as well. So there you go.
Okay, I'll wait a week.
I would, if I may, just throw out a couple of wild.
Please, John, do.
I'm guessing that we will see a new iPod, most likely the video iPod. I can't believe I'm saying this. They do have to have an answer for Microsoft's Zune, which is funny because I've never had to answer for anybody yet.
I have an answer for Microsoft Zune.
I would expect to see the return of the 12-inch laptop. Or some kind of lighter laptop. Because,
for PowerBook.
Yeah, because the iBook is currently their lightest one, their smallest one, and there is a great demand for smaller notebooks in the Mac Pro series, so I would be really surprised if there was not something in that vein.
Now, what about a media center?
The ITV, they've been working on their ITV media center. I don't think they're going to have it ready.
They did a pre-announcement.
They'll have an update. I don't think they have it ready yet.
I think they'll have it ready.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'd love to see it. We'd get
it'd be
one.
Interesting if it were lightweight and had a plug-in module, docking module next to the TV.
Oh.
That could be really cool.
It's kind of, we'll see you on Monday. Thank you, Diane, so much for the call.
Okay, thank
good luck.
Always a big help.
Oh, great. We are running quickly out of time, but let's go ahead and take Karen's, I guess this is the last call from Karen from Santa Cruz. Hi.
Hi, this is Karen. You were discussing software with one guy, and it reminded me of an experience that I think people ought to be really, really careful about firewalls and other software they add, because I went through, you know how McAfee is. I went through McAfee. I had 7, and McAfee says to install 10, you got to take 7 off, and I also had their firewall. Well, it took me about 3 days, and I dug all the way down into the roots, and there were filters I couldn't remove. I went to the website, and those guys supposedly who know it all, I talked to 5 different guys.
Hang on just a second.
Go ahead.
Sean, you're shaking your head. Yeah, do you get this?
I went through this with my father recently with Norton Security Internet.
Yeah,
Internet Security.
Go ahead and discuss it. I'll listen to you guys.
Thank you so much for the call.
It's very difficult because it's blocking everything, and you're supposed to introduce rules that allow access to specific applications. And let's say they're the annoying pop-ups, and the first thing you want to do with the pop-ups is get rid of it. Well, you may have just said, don't allow access for Firefox. And all of a sudden, you don't have a browser. And then you're wondering, why don't I have a browser? And it's because the security software
is
blocking it.
Yeah.
And that stops a lot of people. They think something's wrong with their hardware. They think something's wrong with Firefox. And they don't realize that it's their firewall. And so these firewalls, it's very difficult to install a sophisticated piece of software like that and make it work correctly. You really have to sit down and work with it and understand how it works to make it work right.
Thank you very much for that, Sean. You're listening to Geek Speak. That was Sean Cleveland. We also have John Tracy, Miles Elam. We had backup today by Alex Slias down in Southern California. And on the phones, of course, answering the phones every week, Rick Philman. Thank you so much, geeks, for participating in Geek Speak and making what it is. And thank you very much for listening to Geek Speak. To those that called in, thanks for making us sound like we know what we're talking about. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission.